I'm sure you don't want to be bored in 1995, but you may be interested in a new book about the history of boredom. Maureen Carrigan has a review of Boredom, A Literary History of a Lethargic State of Mind by Patricia Meyer Spax.
It takes a brave author to entitle a book Boredom. Imagine the temptation a title like that offers disgruntled reviewers. Boredom exquisitely replicates the state of mind it attempts to explore. Or better yet, a succinct, onomatopoeic. But alas, I must consign these opening lines to limbo because boredom is a blast. Patricia Meyer Spax has written a rigorous, witty study of a state of mind that lots of us assume has always been a constant of the human condition. Instead, Spax claims that boredom is a fairly recent social construction, dating from the mid-18th century. Spax, who's a well-respected scholar of 18th-century literature and women's studies, edged into the trendy field of cultural studies with her last book, Gossip. She narrows down the yawning subject of boredom by looking at how it's been represented in British literature over the past 300 years. Spax also examines how oscillating ideas about what is or is not boring have continually reshaped readers' judgments about what makes a good book. For instance, Samuel Richardson's three-volume moralistic novel, The History of Sir Charles Grandison, was a runaway hit in 1753. Now it's considered a surefire snooze fest. Throughout her own book, Spax demonstrates that those who study the boring needn't become so themselves. Spax begins by delving into the etymology of the verb to bore, which popped up in English after 1750. Before then, something like the classic satire by Horace, now known as the bore, might have been translated as the impertinent. Among the causes Spax suggests for the appearance of the word boredom were the new split between work and leisure and the rise of individualism. To illustrate how being bored has meant different things at different times, Spax turns to those loquacious literary buddies, Samuel Johnson and James Boswell. Whereas the older Johnson blames himself for the vacuities of his being, Boswell finds more fault with the world. Cranky Boswell anticipates our modern responses to boredom because he regards it as a state others inflict upon him. For 18th century women, however, boredom was verboten. After all, bored women were dangerous. Left to their own devices, they might do something really reckless, like read or write a novel. In the engrossing central chapters of her book, Spax investigates how Gothic novels especially offered middle and upper-class women ways to relieve and covertly represent the boredom of their lives. Boredom surfaces even more boldly in women's private writing. This snippet from the young Fanny Burney's diaries dramatizes why many women of the period were in need of a thrill. Burney writes, "So it is, and so it seems likely to be, that I am to pass my days in the dullest of dull things, insipid, calm, uninterrupted quiet." A few lines later, Burney records the sound of the supper bell. It's clearly the highlight of her day. Throughout boredom, Spax cites many definitions of the condition, but none better than her own. Boredom, she says, presents itself as a trivial emotion that can trivialize the world. Spax demonstrates why, to a curious and creative scholar, nothing is ever too trivial.
Maureen Carrigan teaches at Georgetown University. She reviewed Boredom by Patricia Meyer Spax.